Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 FY22 earnings conference call of LG Equipment, hosted by Asian Markets Securities Private Limited. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. Actual results may differ from such expectations, projections, etc., whether expressed or implied. Participants are requested to exercise caution while referring to such statements and remarks. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Kamlesh Kotak from Asian Markets Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Margaret. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of Asian Markets, we welcome you all to the 3Q FY22 earnings conference call of LG Equipment Limited. We have with us today Mr. Jairam Varadarajan, Managing Director, representing the company. I request Mr. Jairam to take us through an overview of the quarterly and nine-monthly results, and then we shall begin the Q&A session. Over to you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kamlesh. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for taking the time to be with us this evening. As is normal, I will take you through the sales numbers as they happened across the world, and then go to the profitability and a bit on the cash flow, and then share with you our general impressions about the market, and then open it up for questions and answers. Sales, as you have seen from the numbers, has been a pretty robust performance for us. Compared to previous year, Q3, we grew by almost 20%. And you must keep in mind that last year's third quarter was quite a resurgence from the COVID first wave of April. So it has been a good sales performance. So starting from Australia, which was one of the bad markets for us during this period, besides lockdown in a lot of the states of Australia, we also had some challenges in some of our project business in Australia. But things are coming back. It was a temporary thing that we faced for two quarters. We are coming back slowly. And with the opening up of the country, we are quite confident that things will come back to normal in Australia. Just for you to remember, during 2021, Australia really did well for us. In Southeast Asia, again, was quite a challenging period because of COVID in most of the countries. So it has been muted. Though we grew in some of the key markets in Southeast Asia, overall, it was nowhere near the performance compared to the rest of the world. Moving into India, India had a pretty strong performance in Q3. We had a little bit of oxygen business, but very, very little. So bulk of Q3 compared to Q2 has been the regular normal cadence of business other than the O2 business, which was quite strong in especially the second quarter. All the verticals in India have done well. So I can't single one out and say it's been exceptional. All of them have done pretty well. Moving on to Middle East, the challenge in Saudi Arabia because of, again, COVID conditions, but UAE, where we have our own go-to-market direct sales and service organization, they've done well. They've grown well. But overall, as a geography, Middle East has been challenging. Africa was better than last year, but nothing significant, but it's been good. Europe continues to do well for us. We are ahead of our sales plan, the strategic plan that we made for Europe, where we said we are going to invest in organic growth through losses for a period of time. The losses have been lower than planned and the sales has been higher than planned. So it's been quite a positive performance in Europe, continues to be there. North America also was strong. Profitability took a hit because of all kinds of chaos with freight and raw material price increases. I will touch upon that in while talking about the profits of the business. Brazil also did exceedingly well for us. And our automotive equipment business, which had a very bad first quarter, has come back very strongly, and it's done well in the third quarter. So overall, sales has been positive all around the world, resulting in about 20% growth compared to last year's Q3. Going into profitability, the good thing about the Q3 is we were able to move our contribution margin at material cost level. We were able to move it back to prior year levels. We had slipped in the earlier quarter by virtue of the fact that there was a volatile increase, frequent increases in raw material, and we just could not catch up with it. But we took a very strong call in the middle of Q2 that we are going to push forward with prices, which we did. But it is coming in with a lag. And in Q3, we were able to catch up with Q3 of the previous year. So if we had maintained that, considering the increase in sales and the maintenance of our margin at material cost level, as same as last year, our EBITDA should have been about 110 crores, but we did about 720. And bulk of the one big chunk of the reason is the mix. There's a change in the mix of and because of which there have been changes in our variable cost. Employee cost, of course, compared to the previous quarter has gone up because there have been, last year we went through without any increments for our people, and this year there's been an increment, and that's getting reflected in this quarter also, as well as it did in the prior quarter. And some increases in fixed costs as business started coming back to normal. We've had some increases. I think during the COVID period, especially in the second, third, and fourth quarter of what I call the COVID year of 2021, I think we all got spoiled by virtue of the fact that fixed costs became very low, and it set a benchmark for a very attractive P&L. But I think that's a little illusionary because quite a bit of cost, and the customers were quite happy to do business without the suppliers incurring those costs. But now, increasingly, customers want us to be in front of them. They are talking about visits, so these costs are going up, and that's par for the course, and there's nothing to be concerned about. So overall, while EBITDA performed very well, costs have come in, which are normal, and there is nothing abnormal to report. The people cost increases, part of it, like I explained to you, was increment. And if you look at it, there has been, even compared to Q2, there has been an increase in people cost. That's because of the increase in certain cost of people in Europe, which is well within our plan, which we had deferred earlier, waiting to see how business progressed. And as it has progressed, we are continuing to invest. So you get these kind of lumpy increases as we complete our plan in Europe. So if you come to the revenue mix, in Q3, we are back to almost 50-50, India and the rest of the world. In Q2, there was a shift by virtue of the business that came from oxygen, but it's back to 50-50, and it's hovering around that period. In fact, compared to last year, it is actually skewed in favor of the rest of the world. So we are growing consistently in India, but we are also growing proportionately higher to keep that ratio, that mix constant. As far as CapEx is concerned, I had said that our investment will be in the range of 30-35 crores. We are well within that. Nothing significant to report. We have made certain investments, not as advances. We have not yet got the equipment in increasing some of our manufacturing capacity, but nothing of significance to report. Segueing down to our net debt position, our net debt position in December was almost the same as in March. We had a net debt position of around 95 crores. It was about 93 crores in March. I think this is a good performance considering that during this period, we had to overinvest in inventory because of all the supply chain challenges. In spite of those increases in inventory, we were able to compensate by better management of our receivables. And as a consequence, our debt levels remain relatively flat. Going beyond Q3 into where we are right now, there has been a further increase in debt. Nothing of significance, about 7-8 crores. But these are all temporary corrections that we are going through in our inventory. So there's nothing to be worried about. We're quite on the way to releasing quite a bit of cash across all our regions. Except for Europe, which is consuming cash, all the other regions and businesses have actually generated cash during this period. So it's a good situation as far as cash flow is concerned. So this is really what I wanted to summarize on the financials. From a business point of view, the inquiry levels, the interest conversions seem to be still there. Though there is a bit of sluggishness in terms of time frame for conversion. It used to be a lot faster. We're beginning to see maybe customers taking a little longer. And the second pattern we are seeing, maybe not so much in India, but in some parts of the world, is a certain sluggishness in payment. Customers are delaying payment. So we'll have to wait and see and watch this very carefully and manage our cash flow. As far as, you know, everywhere the inquiries are good, business is good, but if somewhere to ask me why is this so, I'm not able to give a coherent answer. It's a multiplicity of many things. China plus one strategy in certain segments in India seem to be playing, and they're playing consistently, textiles as an example. But that can't explain the buoyancy in demand in India across all sectors. I mean, I cannot single out one sector which says that we are very strong. Across the board, we are seeing activity. So I'm not able to, the China plus one strategy doesn't seem to explain across the board why there is buoyancy in India. So it's a little, and while government spending has been talked about, it's still not in infrastructure projects, it has happened in roads and dams and all that. But we don't see that kind of a thing trickling into industrial. We are yet to see. The PLI schemes have been announced. We are very strongly engaged in the customers who have been registered for these programs, but investments are yet to happen. So we are not able to explain the buoyancy in the market in India, but we are well placed to ride it. Similarly, in Europe and America, business is still strong. We'll have to wait and see with the Federal Reserve cutting back on the stimulus as well as increasing the interest rates. We'll have to wait and see what happens to the business. But like we have maintained always that our market share in all these markets is so small that our headroom for growth is so high that the turbulence at the surface of the water is not as relevant because we are so far at the bottom of the ocean. So I think we will continue to grow. So I don't see a problem there. So we continue to manage the business on first principles, and I think we are in good, you know, as of now, we are in a good wicket. So thank you very much. I'll now wait for your question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who would like to ask a question, please press star and one at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Ravi Swaminathan from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon. Congrats on a good set of numbers.
Hi, Ravi. Good afternoon. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, great, sir. I'm fine, sir. Sir, my first question is with respect to if you can give some more flavor on the kind of growth which is being seen across sectors in India. I mean, which are the two, three sectors which are growing above average, which are growing below average? You told textile. Apart from that, what about the big ticket projects like steel-based, cement-based plants? How the growth is from those kind of sectors? If you can give that sense, it will be great. And what kind of volume growth that probably over the past 9 months we might have seen in India, and what kind of growth we can see over the next 1-2 years, given the fact that demand scenario seems to be strong in India?
Yeah, well, there's a large project-based sectors like cement and steel have been muted. But it doesn't mean that there are no inquiries. There's still a lot of activity. But it is just taking a little longer. Cement was very buoyant last year, if you remember, in the even during the COVID quarter, first quarter, it was very, very strong, unprecedented. It continued on and then it kind of softened. But I think with real estate coming back, I think we will start seeing a strong thing. But it just took a temporary step back and they're expecting it to grow. So once that happens, I think we will start seeing great more finalization in these sectors. But other than these large, like infrastructure related sectors, I can't say that there is one that is disproportionately high. All of them have grown. There has been growth across all of the sectors. So I can't say that these are the top three. It would be very difficult to say that. As far as volume growth, unfortunately, I didn't prepare the numbers for this quarter because bulk of our price increases we did last quarter, and therefore I had projected and I had given a number of how much was volume and how much was price. I will come back to you. We can take it offline. As far as growth is concerned, I'm not able to give a coherent answer for why there is growth now in our business, right? Because we are in the capital goods business. That means we contribute to capacity, right? And we are what I would call small capex because we come at the fag end of a project, right? We are not the big capex. And we are continuing to see people investing in our type of capex, not able to ascertain why, right? In some sectors, like I said, textiles, there is an explanation, but in many sectors, there seems to be a buoyancy, there is a demand Like why is copper going up, going like there is no tomorrow, like it's going out of fashion. I mean, there's not enough copper in the world. There's not enough aluminium in the world. So where is that volume? So there are some inexplicable things that are happening. Maybe somebody has got an explanation, but it's not visible to me. So I'm under these circumstances, it will be very difficult to predict what our growth is going to be. But we had declared our strategic business plan where we said we are going to be on a trajectory of $450 million, 25-26. I think we are quite comfortably along that trajectory, right? Probably more comfortable than we were before. So that's the best I can say.
Got it, sir. And in terms of profitability, yeah, so basically, I mean, in terms of gross margins, etc., we are kind of fairly stable. It looks like so we would have passed on much of the price increase that would input cost increase would have passed it on to end customers. So do we need further any price increases going forward? And can we maintain the same 11% consolidated margins going forward, or is there scope for improvement, or can it go down? So basically, I mean, given the fact that inflationary pressure across the board is high, so that's why I'm asking.
As far as price realization is concerned, I don't think Q3 reflects or takes in all of it. Yeah. So we will continue to see marginal improvement in price realization in the fourth quarter. That's my expectation, right?
Okay.
So there's always a lag, yeah.
Okay.
As far as will we have to increase prices again? If commodity prices continue to behave the way they are, and there are again indications that they're going to go up, then we have to react. I mean, there is no other choice, right? The mistake we made the first time around was waiting. We thought this was an aberration, right? And we waited too long. And by the time we reacted, our reaction was inadequate because the frequency of change was very high, right? So then we reacted again and again and again multiple times, right? So at every time you react, there is always a time lag by which you know, you realize the gain, right? So this time around, we are trying to increase our agility by which we respond to these kinds of changes, right? It is clear in our mind that if there are commodity price related price changes, we're going to pass it on, right? Because it's not a matter of a competitive inability, because it's something that affects all the players in the market, right?
Correct.
So we will pass it on. So there may be a lag of a few weeks or maybe a month in terms of realizing it, but it's clear to us as a team that we will pass it on if these violent changes happen, right? Now, as far as when you're talking about EBITDA at 11%, right?
Correct.
Now, I see a possibility for, you know, there is a, obviously that there is a volume, based growth, there is a leverage that we will get. Certainly, that will come to the bottom line, right? That we are very confident of. In addition, we had, you know, I had talked about, I think in the Q3 thing, about a very comprehensive cost, variable cost reduction program. That project is going along nicely. We are quite confident that we will hit our target. So those things should come in. But I expect that the full extent of that that project's value will be more towards the third quarter of next year. Yeah.
Got it, sir. Yeah. Thanks for the detail.
Thank you. Anyone who would like to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Ranjit Shivram from Mahindra Manulife Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Good evening. Am I audible?
Yes, Ranjit, you are. How are you?
Yeah, good, sir. So, just wanted to check with you the integration of Gardner Denver with Ingersoll Rand is almost done, and we hear from the market at least that their activities have increased in terms of dealers and in terms of aggression.
Yeah.
So, are you also seeing such kind of pressure in terms of market share from, and also we also hear that Kirloskar Pneumatics is also getting more aggressive in this screw compressor segment where they were previously not that big. So, given these two scenarios, how do you, what will be your strategy?
Well, certainly Ingersoll Rand, with the new incarnation of Ingersoll Rand, they are more lively and they are more energized. Of course, I mean, then, and we see them, we see that in the market. And we also see not only Kirloskar, but quite a few players who are trying to get a share of the market. Now, this is, all this is, you know, when the market is great, everybody looks like a hero, right? The real challenge comes when the market starts slowing down, and then we need to see who are the ones that are standing, right? Now, because of the growth in the market and because of our own certain initiatives in the market, we have done well. Right, in terms of even growth, we have done well, I believe, with respect to peers, because but I can't make any comment because I don't have the numbers from the peers, but these are all hearsay in the market. So there is, we can never aspire to have 100%. That's not possible, and it's not healthy either. So we have our own segment, we have our own customers, like everybody does, and we will play to our strengths. The goal is to improve the value of your sale rather than, you know, trying to just do a top line. You know? So I, right now, everyone's having a good time. You know? So we'll have to wait and see when markets slow down, who are the ones who really do well.
Okay. And one more thing I wanted to check, sir. There is a lot of capex which is expected to happen in the mobile electronic front where they require oil-free compressors. So mm-hmm. in that, Ingersoll Rand has a, and Atlas Copco has some advantage because we still don't have that completely oil-free compressor. We don't have the kind of presence or kind of nodes that they have. So if the capex in those kind of segments will happen more in the future, will we be tempted to look at some of those segments, or it's better to leave that for those? So how will we, what are we looking at these kind of things that's happening in the market? Because we are seeing a lot of capex happening in such kind of areas where you require a lot more of oil-free compressors.
So I don't know where you got this information that we don't have. We have as good a range as any of the manufacturers in the oil-free segment, right? And oil-free has been a strategic priority in our company over the last 5 years, and we've done some very smart increases in our share of the market in India. Not just in India, but all over the world. And to give you an example, in electronics, we've got some very significant orders from some of the leading semiconductor manufacturers in Southeast Asia. So we are well placed, and in PLI there is quite a bit of emphasis given to electronics and semiconductor, and we are watching that very carefully. We are already in touch with many of the companies who have got their schemes approved, and so we are well placed. We have a full range. I don't know where you got the information that we don't.
No, our oil-free is more of a filter, right? It's not completely oil-free, right? We use that filter.
Absolutely, absolutely not.
So that works fine?
It is completely oil-free.
Okay, as good as what those companies offer.
Absolutely. We are ISO rated as class zero, just like everybody else.
Okay.
No oil in the compression chamber.
And one more area which I wanted to check is that because of this textile and also in future steel going to come, there will be a requirement of large centrifugal air compressors. So in that market, Ingersoll is kind of currently weak.
They are quite strong in that market. The market is not big yet, right? And we do have a product that we are selling. It's a Korean product. It's a good product. We've got some reasonable share of the market, right? So we have some plans which at the appropriate time we will make them public. Yeah.
Okay. Because we are seeing a lot more capex in the steel and textile. So where large textile and steel would require such kind of solution. So that's why I thought I'll check that with you. And we will be completely out of gas, though whatever lucrative measures Government of India comes, we won't even look at that segment.
Which one, gas?
Yeah, city gas distribution and all these segments.
No, oil and gas is not a segment that we would be interested in.
Okay, and lastly, like you also mentioned, this expected increase in interest rate in US. So patents, how did they perform, and are they completely out of the woods, or you see some risk with this the risk of this slowdown in US, or you feel that we are so small player to be impacted with anything of this kind of a slowdown?
Overall, North America, we have such a small player, there is a lot of headroom for us to grow. So I don't think that we can provide that as a reason for any dislocative performance or whatever in the future. So that's not an acceptable thing. We need to come up with strategies to overcome them. As far as patents is concerned, they are in the 5 southeastern states. The market opportunity there is significant. We are working, reorganizing. We've got a new leader at patents. We are building a new strategy. So things look only positive for patents in the future.
Okay. Our Europe strategy, is that going as per what we had planned, or you see is there something positive or negative, whatever you can share in the Europe strategy?
So like I said during my narration, our losses in Europe are lower than our planned losses, and our revenue in Europe is higher than our planned revenue. So we are doing far better than what we had planned. So we are in the third year of a 5-year plan, right? So we plan to make losses in 4 out of the 5 years. And we are doing less loss than what we had planned. So.
Okay, sir. All the best, and we'll catch up later. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harshit Patel from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Sir, my first question is on our distribution footprint overseas. You have explained in the previous calls that in North America, we are the distributors, or we have 50-50 JV. We own the distribution channel. On the other hand, in Europe, we have a different strategy wherein we appoint multi-brand distributors. So what I wanted to understand was that what was our distribution footprint in both of these markets 5 years ago versus what it is today? So for example, in Europe, how many distributors did we have probably 4-5 years ago, and now where we are right now? Similar with North American market as well.
So to answer your first question, distributors own the relationship with customers not just in Europe but also in North America. So our strategy in both these countries has been to get into being considered by some of the strong distributors in both these geographies. Now, our acquisition of patents in Michigan Air were strategic in the sense that when we are not able to get a distributor for organic growth, or we are not able to incubate a distributor like we have done in 5 locations in the U.S., then we look at an acquisition, and that too, if it is in the top market, geographical markets, sub regions of the country that we have looked at. So the strategy is the same. But since we have deployed so much funding into Europe, we will not be looking at acquisition till such time we recover whatever we have invested into Europe. So the plan is consistently the same between Europe and America. There's no difference. I don't have the numbers of the actual numbers of distributors in Europe. The numbers obviously available. It's not readily available with me. And it's also not a number that I would like to share in a public forum because competitors get to listen to what I'm saying as well. But I can tell you it is in Europe 5 years ago to now, probably the distribution growth is 100x. If you look at North America, it's probably 30x. So that's the kind of scale that we have done in terms of distributor development.
No. Understood, sir. Sir, my second question would be on our services business. Sir, could you explain how we conduct that business in different markets? I mean, what are the markets where we would directly do that business? What are the markets where we would go through our dealers and distribution? And what kind of margins do we earn when we do it ourselves versus when we will have to route it through our distribution channel? So if you could explain this bit, it will be very helpful.
So our aftermarket business is predominantly spare parts. The only country where we do direct service is in India. Of course, wherever we own distributors like Patton's or Michigan Air or Pulford, that service is a big chunk of their business. But in the larger scheme of the consolidated size of the business, they're small. So, bulk of our service is rendered for our customers by our distributors. Our aftermarket business is primarily spare parts.
Sure. And sir, as a percentage of overall our sales, I mean, usually the globally the benchmark is that almost Atlas Copco, Ingersoll Rand, they earn almost 1/3 of their revenues from this aftermarket, both services plus spares. So where have we reached in this journey? I mean, how many years it might take us to reach that 1/3 of the sales, that milestone? So could you give some flavor on that? And what would be our share of aftermarket, both in India as well as in overseas geography? So I understand in the global markets, I think it would be very less because of our, lower installed base vis-a-vis what it is in India. So it, would it be possible for you to throw some light on that? That would be my last question.
So, I don't want to give specific percentages, but as far as India is concerned, our aftermarket business as a size as a percentage of our total India business is very comparable to the benchmarks that you talked about. Yeah. As far as international, like you have pointed out, we need to increase our install base. So internationally, our aftermarket is probably around 12-13%, right? So that's really where we need to grow. Now, what is the timing of this growth is a function of how quickly we are able to increase our install base. So it's very difficult for me to give you a mathematical kind of a trajectory, right?
Sure, sir. Appreciate that, sir. Thank you very much for answering my questions.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind our participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Manish Goyal from Enam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Manish. Thank you so much. And hello, sir. Thank you so much and very good evening, sir. Sir, a couple of things. One is on the on a comment you made that the full benefit of price hike realization would also be felt in Q4. So and we have already seen that sequentially material cost has like gross margins have been through. So going forward, can we expect further improvement in gross margin and then probably reflecting that at the EBITDA level, sir?
Absolutely. It may not be as significant as we have done from what we have done in Q2 to Q3 or Q3 of last year to Q3 of this year, the kind of corrections that we have done. It may not jump at that same level, but a percentage and a half is definitely what I expect there will be an improvement in the fourth quarter.
It's at gross margin level or at EBITDA?
Well, I expect at a sale level, which means hopefully we won't eat it up and it'll go to the bottom line. Yeah.
Okay. And also, like in last call, you had mentioned that we had taken price hike probably a little late in the international market and towards the end of Q2. Did we see benefit of that in Q3, or so when you meant that we see improvement in Q4, it will be largely driven by this international price hike?
No, at multiple levels, you know, there were prices in India that were on rate contract, right? That could not be realized quickly. There were some oxygen supplies that were on old prices that will come, that were not corrected. International takes a lag. There is always a lag, and distributors have a backlog of orders. Mm-hmm. And because of logistics issues, we had a backlog, and therefore deliveries had to be deferred. So, which means all those deliveries had to happen at the old prices, right? So, multiplicity of factors that caused a gap between a price correction on paper and a price realization in reality. Yeah.
Sure. And on challenges related to supply chain, you did alluded to that for at least the US market, the challenges for the supply chain. Just want to get your perspective going forward. What is like in terms of still are there challenges on supply chain? Are you facing any challenges on semiconductor shortages related to which may impact our business and material availability and things like that?
Well, semiconductor, unfortunately for us, we are not a big consumer, but so we had to overstock in relation to these challenges, but it's each of them add up, right? So supply chain in terms of availability and certain types of parts continue to be there. Supply chain in terms of freight delays, freight uncertainties and freight pricing continue to be there, right? So the uncertainty has, while it has reduced, has not gone away. Yeah.
Okay. And in Q2 call, sir, you had were expecting that probably Q3 might see some sequential decline in revenues, but somehow we have more or less maintained our revenue. So what could have changed and how do we see going forward, sir?
So like I said, Manish, that I'm not able to decipher this demand, right? Mm-hmm. Certain segmental demand I can decipher, but general buoyancy in the market, I'm unable to decipher. Different people have different theories towards it. Not all of them add to it. There are 100 blind men touching the elephant and explaining it. And so there are different explanations that are coming. When you don't understand something, you have to be cautious, right? Even if the results are positive, right? So that's where we are at. We are not being conservative. We are being very aggressive in terms of making use of all the market opportunities. But at the same time, we are cautious when it comes to deploying cash. We are cautious in terms of saying, you know, any big moves that we need to move. We are all watching that.
And sir, on capacity, like in past, you have always maintained that we would not require significantly large capex going forward. But looking at the growth momentum, do you expect that we should probably look for some capacity enhancement, and will it entail a fair bit of capex going forward?
We are continuing to invest in increasing our capacity wherever it is relevant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, whether it is machine tools, we keep investing. Like I've explained in the past, we are not a process industry where there is a linear link to capacity and investment.
Mm-hmm.
We are like a step function, right? We have multiplicity of machines with multiplicity of capacities. Not all of them are finely balanced. It's not possible. So,
okay.
In sometimes we will overinvest in one machine because that's the size of the machine. So that machine will be carrying a lot of capacity and another machine may not have. So we will invest it. So that's all. Those investments are all part of this 30, 35 crores that we keep doing every year, right?
Right. Okay.
Now, the next big investment is going to come when we move our city factory to our new campus, right?
Mm.
That will involve investing in building, and which we have to. I mean, we'll probably do that over the next couple of years, right? We have to do it because we're running out of space in the city factory. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, those are what I call as non-return investment, because the investment into buildings, right? And those kinds of investments will be, like I said, if you look at our MD&A, I've said that those kinds of investments which are not based on specific returns will be done with equity and our own cash rather than debt. So that's the way we are going to do this. Yeah.
Okay. Fine, sir. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Ranjit Shivram from Mahindra Manulife Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. I just wanted to check with you, like, how much will be textile as a percentage of compressors, because that segment we are at least seeing next 2-3 years in a high growth phase. So will that become a substantial portion of our revenue?
I don't want to talk about specific percentages of each sector. That is too competitive an information. We are a very strong player in textile. We will continue to be a strong player, and we will grow from strength to strength because we have purposely new products that have come in, which will help as a value proposition to the textile industry. So we're quite confident of that.
So is compressor more relevant with spinning capex, or more relevant in a garmenting or made up so the other portion?
In terms of garmenting has the least requirement. The maximum would be in an air jet weaving facility. And spinning, of course, you know, with a 25,000 spindle mill will need about a 30 horsepower or a 50 horsepower machine. So the highest is in air jet weaving.
Okay, and there are certain requirements for air jet spinning machines also. That also comes for a lot of
air jet spinning is not still not a big percentage of the yarn industry.
Okay. And in terms of this electronics also, most of these electronics here, like for mobile and all the electronics here, in terms of semiconductors, in terms of mobile, in terms of consumer goods,
that also requires a lot of compressed air in terms of cleaning and other operations.
Okay.
So just wanted to get some idea on the future growth potential. Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question at this time. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, please press star and one. Reminder to all the participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one. As there are no further questions from the participants, I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. I don't have anything specific to add. I think the questions pretty much covered the points that I did not cover in my monologue at the beginning. So again, things are looking positive. We'll have to wait and see to get a coherent explanation for what's happening in the economies around the world. We are pushing ahead, taking advantage of every opportunity without any remit. So I think the fourth quarter, as far as the top line is concerned, would be roughly similar to the third quarter, and profitability, we are hoping, will be marginally better.
Thanks, Jai. So on behalf of Asian Markets, special thanks to Mr. Jai for providing the insights about the company's call. And thank you, everyone, for joining for the call. With that, we conclude the call. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Asian Markets Securities Private Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.